And Janardhan Maharaj asked Prabhupada, how can I be prepared to debate with the pundits of South India? You know, what can I learn? And Prabhupada told him, if you can learn the 30 most essential verses of Bhagavad Gita, you will not be they will not be able to defeat you at all. So, I have a list of those 30 verses at home. So we shall see if we can maybe learn some of those verses. But at least some of the most essential verses of Bhagavad Gita, we will try to learn. Bhagavad Gita. So, and you can bring notebook as well. That would be very good. You can make notes and ask questions. And like I say, each week, my idea is each week I'll give a little sheet with some homework asking some questions about the chapter that we discussed, and with one shloka for everybody to learn for the following week. So we're hoping that that will be something that everyone will like to do. Bhagavad Gita is actually the foundation of Krishna consciousness. Gita means song. And there are many songs, we know. She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's so many songs, so many Gitas. But this song is the Bhagavad Gita. That means the song of God. Bhagavad means Krishna, Bhagavan. Bhagavan song, song of God. So it is supramundane, transcendental song. It is coming from the spiritual world. Some people say that Bhagavad Gita is a historical book. And some people say it is a political book because it discusses warfare and so on. It is just in the middle of that warfare. And others say that the whole of Bhagavad Gita is allegorical. Krishna is this, Arjuna is that, and you know the battlefield means this and all of these things. But we don't agree with any of those, actually, by any of those opinions. Although it took place, it was couched in a time in history. It is not historical. It is transcendental. That means it is eternal. It is not fixed in some time and place. It is an eternal treatise. And exposition of spiritual knowledge. Otherwise, when Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that first I instructed this imperishable spiritual knowledge to Vivashan, the sun god. Then how would that be possible? Because the sun, we know, existing long before Krishna advented in the world, 5,000 years ago. So historically, that cannot be correct. But Krishna has told that. So we understand that Gita is eternal. Gita forms part of the Mahabharata. Mahabharata is a narration of the story we know of the Pandavas and the Kauravas. And it is told by Vaishampayana Muni to Maharaj Janmijaya. And the Bhagavad Gita comes in the Bhishma Parva of Mahabharata. And it is the conversation, narrated conversation between Maharaj Dhritarashtra and Sanjay. Vaishampayana and Sanjay, they are both disciples, students of Vedavyas. And by the grace of Vedavyas, Sanjay had the mystic power that he could see the conversation taking place between Krishna and Arjuna as it happened, live broadcast. And no television or internet or anything in those days, of course. But by his spiritual intuition and the grace of Vedavyas, he was able to relay directly to Maharaj Dhritarashtra this sacred conversation between Krishna and Arjuna on the battlefield. Bhagavad Gita is also known as Gita Upanishad. And Upanishad means, the word Upanishad means, Upa means to come near, and Anishad means to sit down. To sit down near. The idea meaning that we will sit at the feet of the Master and hear about transcendental knowledge. Upanishad, this is where the word comes from. It is Shrotapanta. Shrotapanta means the knowledge that is received through the ear. Shruti. Shruti. Bhagavad Gita is Shruti. It is spoken by Krishna and heard by Arjuna. And our line is the line of Shrotapanta. That we are receiving transcendental knowledge from the higher coming down to the lower. Not that by mental speculation or by our Srila Guru Maharaj, we would say by exploring spirit that we will find the truth. But rather by submission to the teacher, we will understand the truth. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he has said, real darshan is through the ear, not through the eye. What will we see with our flesh eye? We will only see external things. So, Srila Guru Maharaj used to say, more important than seeing the deity is gaining the eye by which we see the deity. And we gain the eye, the proper conception to understand the deity, to understand Krishna, to understand transcendental truth through oral submission, by hearing submissively the message of Godhead from the bona fide spiritual teacher, from the source, proper source. It is important to understand spiritual truth in this way. Krishna himself gives this advice to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. Tadvidi pranipatena parikrishnena sevaya upadekyanti te jnanam jnaninas tattadarshanam. That you will need to approach a spiritual master with three prerequisites. That is pranipat, pariprashna, and sevaya. Pranipat means with exclusive regard. So not just curiosity. That, you know, we'll learn something from here, and then we'll go there, and we'll learn something from there, and this and that. That's what I call spiritual tourism. You know, grab a little bit here, grab a little bit there, and make a little bit of a spiritual kitchery for yourself. And maybe in the beginning, when we are searching after truth, that may be okay, necessary for us. But when we come to be serious students of Bhagavad Gita, we have to come with exclusive regard to this line of thought. As Arjuna came to Krishna, in the very beginning, he tells to Krishna, I do not know what is right, what is wrong, I'm bewildered, so I am surrendering to you. You please take charge of me and tell me what is for my best benefit. So this is pranipat. And Guru Maharaj says that we come with this idea that I'm finished with this world. Finished with this world. Of course, we may be finished with this world, but the world may not be finished with us. This is the problem. And I told this the other night, that the story we heard from our Param Gurudev, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, the sadhus walking on the banks of the river in Haridwar, and it's very cold there in the winter. And one of those sadhus, he sees a blanket floating in the river and thinks, if I get that blanket, I can become warm. So he jumped into the river and swam across to get the blanket. But as he grabbed the blanket, oh, blanket's not a blanket, but blanket is a bear. And the bear grabbed him. So when the bear grabbed him, then his friend, the other sadhu, said, "Ore bhai, just leave the blanket and come. Come out. You know, why are you bothering with that?" And he shouted back, "I'm trying to leave the blanket, but the blanket won't leave me." So this is our situation in this material world. We want to leave the material world, but the material world doesn't want to leave us. So this is our problem. But first thing is to admit. When you are an alcoholic, you have to admit, I am an alcoholic. That's what they do when they go to the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, isn't it? They stand up. My name's Bob, and I'm an alcoholic. It's been 31 days since my last drink, or whatever they say, you know. So similarly, we can stand up and say, I am Dave Ashish, and I am a material world addict. And it's been 5 minutes since my last encounter with material desire. Oh, how sad is that? But anyhow. But this is the first step. The first step is to admit that we need some help. And help means from outside of ourselves. And some people say, you know, if God is there, then I can have a direct relationship with Him. I don't need any intermediary or any guru or any teacher or anything. But this is foolishness, arrogance. Because as our Guru Maharaj said, if that were so, then we would gain our fortune immediately. We would get everything we needed immediately. So that's not the case. We need some help from outside of ourselves. Just like any subject that you want to study, you have to go to find a professor in that subject, isn't it? And learn from them. Go to their class, learn from them, read their book, or whatever it is. And there's no difference in spiritual life. But we have to be sure who is the right teacher. That what are the credentials of the teacher? Just on the internet, you can buy a degree if you want to. Just Google a degree, Harvard degree. But when you go to show that degree to somebody, what you bought for $100 or whatever it is, they'll probably just laugh at you. Because if you need a Harvard degree, it has to be signed by the board of the Harvard professors. So, and what are their credentials? This we have to know. So when we are seeking a spiritual master to teach, under whom we will learn Bhagavad Gita and spiritual knowledge, we have to be sure that their credentials are bona fide, that they have the proper certificates, you can say. So, pranipat, this is the first essential prerequisite to studying Bhagavad Gita. Pranipat and pariprashna. Pariprashna means proper inquiry or relevant inquiry. Not just, because we're inquisitive. Or, you know, we want to know this, or we want to know that, or, you know, we want to hear something far out, or something, you know. No, not that. Something that is actually relevant to my progress in spiritual life. That means, first of all, necessary some introspection and self-examination as to where I am now and where it is that I wish to proceed to. Then our questions should be in this line. From where I am now, how do I go from here to there? From the darkness, how do I proceed to the light? From ignorance, how do I proceed to knowledge? From misery, how do I proceed to blissfulness? These are the questions that, these are fundamental questions in life that we should not avoid, but we should know where we are searching the answers. Now the problem is, everyone has these questions, but everybody looking in the wrong place for those answers. Superficial things, looking for superficial things. But if we understand that we are spiritual by nature, then we will have to admit that nothing of this material world will ever give us satisfaction. It's incompatible with our spiritual nature. It's like, you know, the example is given of giving the fish. When you take the fish out of the water, if you give it anything, you know, a Rolls Royce to drive in, you know, a mansion to live in, you know, a supermodel girlfriend, or, you know, whatever it is, he's not going to be happy with that.
Yeah.
Until you just put him back in the ocean or the river, then he's happy in his own domain. So also, We're running after so much phantasmagoria in this material world, thinking that these things will satisfy us, will give us fulfillment in life. But they won't, because we're a fish out of water. We need to go back to our own domain. And our own domain is the spiritual nature, the spiritual world. We are made of spirit. Then we cannot find fulfillment with dead matter. We can only find fulfillment with spirit. Spirit with spirit. This is the only proper compatibility. Otherwise, we see everything through a filter. The soul, now dormant soul, filtering everything through our misconceived prejudices and acquired conditioning. And through this, we experience the world. But we experience an illusory world. None of it is real, actually. And we spend our time thinking that the things of this material world are important, but actually they are not important. Only important in as much as how to keep our body and mind healthy so that we can have facility for inquiring and cultivating spiritual knowledge. So Bhagavad Gita is for this. And Bhagavad Gita covers many subject matters. So many different kinds of subject matters in Bhagavad Gita. So many philosophies are weighed in Bhagavad Gita and disposed of. All of the classic philosophies of India, Satdarshan philosophies of India, you'll find their roots in Bhagavad Gita. They are discussed there. And even non-Vedic philosophies, you will also find there, discussed in Bhagavad Gita. Everywhere you can find. And so many people will get different kind of inspiration from Bhagavad Gita. But broadly we can say that the subject matter of Bhagavad Gita is karma, jnana, yoga, and bhakti. These four things in a broad sense. Karma means not just, bad karma, man, not that. But karma means action. And Gita describes three kinds of karma. There's vikarma. Vikarma means the activity that we do that is detrimental to us and detrimental to society. That is called vikarma, or sinful work, or sinful activity. Vikarma and akarma. Akarma means neglecting your duty. And karma actually means works that are in line with dharma. So this is discussed in Bhagavad Gita. And jnana is discussed in Bhagavad Gita. Knowledge. Mundane knowledge and transcendental knowledge. Both are discussed in Bhagavad Gita. And yoga also discussed in Bhagavad Gita. Ashtanga yoga. Ashtanga yoga means yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, parayana, jhana, dharana, samadhi. The eightfold process of yoga. And finally, and most importantly, bhakti. Krishna tells to Arjuna, of all kinds of men, you should be a yogi, he tells to Arjuna. So, be a yogi, he says. But that doesn't mean, pop down to the sports shop and buy yourself a leotard and enroll in the yoga class at the local community center. Not that kind of yoga. Although that kind of yoga is also discussed there. The very basic asana is one of the basic first steps of Ashtanga yoga. This is what most people think of when they hear the word yoga. Bodily exercise. It's a good thing. I wish I'd done it when I was younger. And we know that maybe I'd be in better shape than I am now. And we heard, and our Guru Maharaj also, he told one day he was walking after one function and he said, "You see how straight my back is?" I'm an old man, but my back is... And Guru Maharaj was like over 6 feet tall, which is very tall for a Bengali man. And he said, you see how straight my back is? It's because as a young man, I did yoga asana every day. So, we're not saying not to do that. But this is not what the message of Bhagavad Gita is. And also, even Ashtanga Yoga, finally rejected by Arjuna. Arjuna says, you know, by this process, I think it is it'd be easier to control the wind than to bring the mind under control by the process of Ashtanga Yoga. So, karma, jnana, yoga, and bhakti. And actually, the cultivation of karma, when karma becomes karma yoga, by doing your duty to link with the Supreme, then when that karma yoga becomes nishkama karma yoga, that means free of the desire for any selfish benefit, when it is done as a duty for the pleasure of the Lord, that karma eventually becomes bhakti. And the cultivation of jnana, the cultivation of knowledge, when that also becomes free of self-desire for emancipation, for upliftment of one's own self, and is cultivated again for the satisfaction of the Lord, that also will transition into jnana shunya bhakti. That is, first is jnana mishra bhakti, then jnana shunya bhakti, and jnana shunya bhakti, that is shuddha bhakti. And of all of the subject matters discussed in Bhagavad Gita, the final and highest teaching of Bhagavad Gita is bhakti, sharanagati. Sharanagati, Krishna in the 18th chapter, in the last chapter, Krishna tells Arjuna, the very famous Guru Maharaj said, clarion call verse, the clarion call of Gita, Sarva Dharmam Vrityaja Mamekam Sharanam Vraja Ahantam Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Ishami Masucha. Sarva Dharmam. Now, Sarva Dharma means a million and one things, other things that you could be doing in this world. Sarva Dharma. What you think is your duty in this world, what you think is your purpose in this world, is all Sarva Dharma. And Krishna says, leave it. Leave it all and just surrender to me. Mam ekam sharanam braja. And that means, by surrendering to me, you will come to me. And where? In Braja. In Vrindavan. It is a hint there. Like a secret hint. It alludes to Vrindavan. You can come to me in Vrindavan if you surrender to me. And aham tam sarva papebhyo. Don't be afraid that you'll be overwhelmed by pap, by sin, for leaving your dharma in this world, your duty in this world. I will protect you from that. Moksha ishami mashucha. I will give you liberation from that and you will come to me. This is Krishna's promise. So, this is the sum and bone of the teaching of Bhagavad Gita. And where the Bhagavad Gita finishes on this point, Srimad Bhagavatam begins. Srimad Bhagavatam, which is considered, we can say, Bhagavad Gita primary teaching of spiritual life, and Srimad Bhagavatam graduate teaching of spiritual life. Where Gita finishes, Bhagavatam begins. And the perfect teacher and preacher of Srimad Bhagavatam is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu preached Srimad Bhagavatam and showed through his own life how to be a Bhagavat devotee. So we are followers in that line. That means that the of the preeminent commentaries on Srimad Bhagavad Gita, the preeminent commentaries, they are from the Sri Sampradaya, Ramanujacharya's commentary. From the Madhva Sampradaya, Madhvacharya's commentary. And in our line, after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Baladev Vidyabhushan's commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, in modern days, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. Bhaktivinoda Thakur made two editions of Bhagavad Gita, two commentaries of Bhagavad Gita. And then the first commentary, real commentary, you can say, in the English language, Bhagavad Gita as it is by Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada, which is based on those commentaries of Baladeva and Vishwanath. And our Guru Maharaj's commentary, The Hidden Treasure of the Sweet Absolute. Guru Maharaj's commentary is not so extensive as Swami Maharaj Prabhupada's, but his commentary is very succinct and very deep. And the few purports that Guru Maharaj has given in his commentary, they are very enlightening and very essential for the followers of Chaitanya Dev to understand. Especially his commentaries on Chaturshloki and on the verses of the 10th chapter of Gita and many others. But particularly, there are many very deep commentaries, and we will try to cover those purports of Guru Maharaj. Not try, definitely we'll cover those while in our discussion group. So, our Srila Govinda Maharaj, when I just saw it actually, a framed picture, or framed written in Gurudev's own handwriting, which he, when Vaishnava Maharaj, Shrutashrava Prabhu, asked him, like, how should we, what should we do, our program in our temple? How should it be? And the very first thing was regular discussion of Bhagavad Gita. This was the first thing that he says there. And then other scriptures, and then he says arrangement for Nama Sankirtan. And other things, maybe eight different points. But first, regular recitation and study of Bhagavad Gita. And then Gurudev also loved Bhagavad Gita very much. And he would say that, he said, even now, like after 50 plus years of studying Bhagavad Gita, even now when I read it, new light I'm getting every time. So Bhagavad Gita is, because it is living, it is actually Krishna himself in the form of a book. His song is non-different with him. The Gita is Krishna, and Krishna is the Gita. Just as Krishna is the Maha Mantra, and the Maha Mantra is Krishna, one and the same. So Gita also one and the same with Krishna. Then to study Bhagavad Gita every day, it is very good. If we can read even one shloka of Bhagavad Gita every day, that will be very helpful to us in our life. And many great thinkers have got much inspiration from Bhagavad Gita. Even Albert Einstein, he said, after reading Bhagavad Gita, all other literature seems puny and trivial in comparison. So we feel very happy to have the opportunity to speak something about Bhagavad Gita and to begin this discussion group. It will be, who knows the Bhagavad Gita, they can understand how to traverse this life. How to go from birth to death in a progressive way and to find the absolute truth. All answers are there in Bhagavad Gita. They're all there. And sometimes I see some of our devotees, and they are telling so many things in their life and doing so many things in their life. And constantly I think, how can they do that if they have read Bhagavad Gita? Which books are they reading when they're telling this or doing that? Who knows Bhagavad Gita? You must live by the teaching of Bhagavad Gita. Who will live by the teaching of Bhagavad Gita? They will be a man or woman of higher type. They will be able to move in this world, like Lord Jesus said, to be in the world but not of the world. And this you can do if you become a good student of Bhagavad Gita. Good student of Bhagavad Gita means, as I said before, to submissively hear the message of Bhagavad Gita. So we have called this, on that little poster I made, the light of the Bhagavad Gita, discussing the philosophy, the meaning, and the message of the Lord's eternal soul. So this is the purpose of our discussion group, and we will continue for as long as we can, and for as long as devotees will come to discuss Bhagavad Gita. I cannot say, it will be 10 weeks, or it will be 30 weeks, or that. No, we can go on forever and ever discussing Bhagavad Gita. One shloka of Bhagavad Gita we can discuss for so long. But this is my hope, as I said, for those of you who weren't here right at the beginning, that my hope is that in our Bhagavad Gita discussion group, we will, from next week, we will go through chapter by chapter, and at the end of our evening, I'll give you some homework to do, some questions and answers about the chapter that we've just discussed.
But it will be happy homework.
Yes, happy homework, yeah.
Don't be afraid to come next week.
And also, one shloka from Bhagavad Gita each week to take home and learn that shloka. And that not just like a parrot. Maybe you will have to read like a parrot to begin with. But try to understand the meaning of the shloka. What is the meaning of the shloka? And you can refer to your Bhagavad Gita as it is, your hidden treasure of the Sweet Absolute. You can refer there and you can see word for word what the translation is, and if there's any purport, what the meaning of that verse is. Some explanation will be there. And we can also discuss the meanings of those verses. So my hope is that all of those who will attend regularly, they will all become Bhagavad Gita pundits. And Prabhupada, as I said, Prabhupada told Janardhan Maharaj, if you can learn the 30 main shlokas of Bhagavad Gita, no one will be able to defeat you from any opposing philosophy. So we shall try. I have a list of those 30 that he recommended. And maybe they're not the same ones that Guru Maharaj liked, but I think some of them will be there. And from that we will make that our basis. So hopefully we can learn those and many more. But at least some of the key shlokas, what they are, what they mean, and what is the message of Bhagavad Gita to the world. We should be able to not only discuss that, but also try to give that to others. Of course, Krishna also warns in the last chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he says to Arjuna, this knowledge should not be told to those who are envious of me, who are averse to devotion. You should not reveal these truths to them. So someone may say, then that means we shouldn't tell anybody because everybody's averse to the Lord, and especially in the Kali Yuga. But actually, there is a difference between those who are wicked and envious and those who are just ignorant and need some help to be able to understand the truth. And many people seeking for the truth. So Bhagavad Gita is the answer, actually, to all of the questions of life. From the very beginning, all of the problems that Arjuna is facing, they are not new or unique to him. They are all of our problems, actually. So we shall try to go through step by step all of those things that Arjuna went through, try to understand his perspective from where he came from, and also how that relates to the world as we know it today. And if indeed it does relate to the world as we know it today. Of course it does, but it may take some thought on our part as to how the principles of Bhagavad Gita, which were spoken 5,000 years ago, how they are relevant to the 21st century life that we are in now. But as we said at the beginning, the Bhagavad Gita is not an historical book. It is eternal. It is not fixed in any time or space, but it is the eternal song of the Lord, and it has as much relevance today as it did 5,000 years ago. If we can jettison the cultural setting and baggage that comes along with that, and see how that applies to our soul, then we can be benefited, and our life will become very blessed. Who knows Bhagavad Gita? They are blessed. Krishna himself says, who studies this conversation between myself and Arjuna? They worship me by their intelligence. And when I first picked up the Bhagavad Gita, when I was like 14 years old, was my first encounter with the Bhagavad Gita. And I'm going through it. I knew this is something special, something wonderful. Actually, I'll tell you very shortly how I first came in contact with Bhagavad Gita, because it's relevant and interesting. I was 14 years old, and at that time I was dabbling with Buddhism and looking for some alternative. And more or less, I was an atheist, rejected my Christian upbringing as more or less as being nonsense. And looking for some other truth. And at 14 years old, one of my school friends, suddenly his mother became ill with cancer and died. She was misdiagnosed. You know, it wasn't quite as common as it is today. It was misdiagnosed as something trivial. And then very suddenly she died from cancer. My friend, his name was Ian, he was completely inconsolable. Didn't know what to do. So being a bit of a boisterous, you can say, teenager, we had one man that lived on the caravan site by the river. He played this bamboo flute. So everybody called him Bamboo. That was his name. You know, everyone knew him, Bamboo. And we knew he was like this kind of mystic sort of guy, you know, so like a guru type figure. So after my friend's mother died suddenly, and he's like inconsolable, we don't know what to do. We love him, we're his friend, we want to help him. So then one of us said, Bamboo, he'll know what to do. Let's take him to see Bamboo. So off we went down to the caravan site, and we sat with Bamboo for a little while. But still, like, Ian's inconsolable. Then Bamboo says, okay. He goes to a cupboard in his caravan, and he opens up the cupboard, and inside the cupboard, he brings out this book. It's like wrapped in silk cloth, and he's like very reverential, brings it out. And he opens it up, unwraps it like this, touches it to his head, and he opens it up. And he looks, skips through, and then he starts reading. For the soul, there is never birth nor death, nor having once been, does he ever cease to be. He's eternal, undying. He's not slain when the body is slain. And so on and so on. Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. And after reading that, he closed it and he put it in my friend's hand and he said, this is for you. And gave it to him. And this is my first time I heard Bhagavad Gita. But I knew this is something wonderful, you know? This is something incredible. I've never heard anything like this before. Just intuitively, I suppose, I knew this was something special. And before long, I also had a copy of that Bhagavad Gita as it is. And I would sit in my home and reading that. And I remember going through the first chapter, all these names of these warriors, and I couldn't make head nor tail of it. And I just thought, oh, I'm never going to understand this. It's just too much. How are you supposed to understand it? But then, just by chance, I came across this verse where Krishna says, those who study this holy conversation, they worship me by their intelligence. And reading that, I just thought, okay, I've got to continue. I've got to continue reading it. So, anyway, it was a kind of awakening. Young lad's awakening, you know, the Bhagavad Gita. And ever since, the Bhagavad Gita has been very dear to me. And as it is to all devotees, and Srila Govinda Maharaj said the devotees should study Bhagavad Gita every day. And as part of the Thakur's program every day, we're reciting Bhagavad Gita, or I hope they're reciting Bhagavad Gita every day in the afternoon. So now we are begun our study group today. So next week, everyone, please bring your Gita, bring a notebook, and come with enthusiasm, and we will begin on the first chapter, observing the armies. And today, for our inaugural meeting, we have with us Sripad Bhakti Ranjan Madhusudan Maharaj. So then we know that our endeavor will be successful. When Vaishnava is there, then we know that the endeavor must be successful. So now I'd like to ask Maharaj to say something, enlighten us something, his realizations about Bhagavad Gita. And then if anyone has any questions about, general questions about Gita, we can discuss. Then we can have some kirtan, a little prasadam, and go away enlivened till next week. Jai Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.
Well, first of all, I can say I give a ditto to everything that Devashish Prabhu has said to you, how he's presented Bhagavad Gita to you. Then I can say all of this is a very good presentation of what is Bhagavad Gita. And one thing I would like to say is that we hear many people giving classes around the world, giving talks, giving discourses and everything. Please try to understand that here in Green Street you have a treasure. You cannot always be recognized in your own town, maybe. But Devashish Prabhu gives very, very substantial and appropriate classes. We've heard this, and we're always asking the devotees, please make some recordings. This way others can share these classes too. But having said that, you have a very capable person to give you guidance in Bhagavad Gita. And how is he capable? Because he has come with the process of understanding what is spiritual life. He's come with faith, with surrender, with submissive inquiry, and with seva to Srila Guru Maharaj and to Srila Gurudev. And Bhagavad Gita, this book that we have some opportunity to regularly hear about Bhagavad Gita and learn from Bhagavad Gita, it is the fortune of everybody who will come in touch with that. And Bhagavad Gita, we can understand its importance by the fact that we have seen with our own eyes, in our own presence, how one very respectable devotee, Rishabdev Prabhu of United States, he came to India to die. He came to India to leave his body with Gurudev's permission. He called Gurudev, Gurudev considered, and then he came. And the time that he is going to leave his body, then I am there with Gurudev and with Rishabdev Prabhu. And Gurudev sent for Guru Maharaj's Bhagavad Gita, to bring the Bhagavad Gita, to bring Charanamrita and Tulsi, Prashad Tulsi. And that time when Rishabdev was going to pass away, Gurudev himself didn't put, but gave instruction to put the Bhagavad Gita on the chest of Rishabdev. And we could think, well, it could be many books, but it was Bhagavad Gita. And so this Bhagavad Gita book, just the touch of Bhagavad Gita, it is of great value. But we want to touch not only the external part, we want to touch the message of Bhagavad Gita. We want to understand and touch the whole mood behind it. And the mood behind it is Krishna giving advice for everyone's greatest benefit. He is giving advice for everyone's benefit. And so we need to do our part and hear what is that advice and put it into practice. So There are many ways that we can see any jewel. You can hold it in your hand in different ways. And Bhagavad Gita, as we explore it more and more, it is like a jewel. You turn a little bit and different light and different shape, different kind of nature comes from that gem. And so by constantly going to the Gita again and again and again, we are getting more and more understanding. And even now, I tend to maybe cheat a little bit because we listen often to things more than we read them. But still, listening to Bhagavad Gita repeatedly, then sometimes it's like, have I missed that verse before? It's we really feeling that, oh, it is so fresh always. So this is a wonderful opportunity. You've got a wonderful teacher. You've got the wonderful book. And we've got our teacher parampara. We've got our line of teachers. So we are not giving something blindly. We are giving from Baladev Vidyabhusan. We're giving from Vishwanath Chakrabarti. We're giving from Srila Saraswati Thakur, from Srila Guru Maharaj, Srila Gurudev to the present time. It is not a manufactured thing, but as it is, as Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada gave his Gita name, as it is. And it's such a small book. It is such a small book. Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and so many books are very voluminous. But Bhagavad Gita, in a very small way, is giving us so much. So, I also encourage you, maybe each week just one piece of paper you need to write down a shloka and take the notes from that week. Something. But I've often thought that we should actually give pencil and paper to people who come to attend and say, okay, then this is homework and next week we will learn. And one person who knew many slokas from Bhagavad Gita was Sripad Vaishnava Maharaj, who many of us know, Shruta Shrava Prabhu from America. And he learned slokas from Bhagavad Gita while driving a truck. And he used to write out a shloka of Bhagavad Gita and put it on the dashboard, so by the speedometer. So when he's driving his truck, then, because that was his job, he's a family man. He had how many? 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, I don't know how many children. But he had a very big family. And so he's a family man earning a living. But while he's driving the truck, he's got verse Bhagavad Gita, probably the only truck driver in America who's driving his truck and learning a verse from Bhagavad Gita. And he said, well, that's how I learned so many slokas, because day by day I have on my dashboard of the truck. So we know this is the age of motor cars, it's the age of traveling to go somewhere. When you're in your car, when you're traveling, going on the metro, on the bus, going to work, I mean, going to college, whatever it may be for the younger ones, we always have an opportunity where we can nourish ourselves, use that time nicely. People say, oh, I don't have time to do this, I don't have time to do that. If we want to make the time, we do have the time. And what better thing to do with our time than to give some focus in our daily sadhana, our daily life, to Bhagavad Gita. That doesn't mean that we are ignoring Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, not ignoring the books of Gurudev and Guru Maharaj. And in proper measure, we will try to make our cultivation wholesome. When you are this modern age, people are very conscious about vitamins and irons and what other things, I don't know. But it's not that you only have vitamin D in your diet or vitamin A in your diet or calcium in your diet, whatever it may be. You have a balanced diet. And to study Bhagavad Gita to some degree on a regular basis is giving us a very substantial balance in our diet, along with the other practices of our chanting and kirtan association with the devotees. And I am surprised and happy to see so many devotees here this evening. And we had a wonderful evening aarti today, by the way. Wonderful evening aarti. Very loud and very loud, very beautiful, with the kirtan of the genuine Bengali mridanga of Toshan Krishna Prabhu, and very wonderful kirtan this evening. And we are thinking that these activities, these are all for the pleasure of their lordships, for the pleasure of our gurus, and it is what we should be doing with our time in this age. Chanting, associating with the devotees, engaging in some seva, studying Bhagavad Gita, these things are our life and soul. Hari Hara Krishna Jadavaya Namaha.